We're going to talk about that salvation power, the power of the gospel today, as I ask you to take your Bibles and turn to Romans chapter number 1. We started off last week with the introduction to the book of Romans and talked about who the author was, Paul the Apostle, how he was a servant of Jesus Christ, a servant of the Lord, and not just a servant of the Lord, but we said it's important for us to serve God and be a servant to others as well. And it's a good thing for us to set aside our desires for our life and to follow God's desires for our life. You know, that word there that we talked about, that Greek word there for servant, is actually the word for slave. And Paul was saying, even though I've been made free from sin, I am willingly becoming a slave. My desires are now enslaved to Christ. I have become a willing slave to the Lord and what He wants for my life. We talked about what it means to be separated not just from the things of this world, but separated unto God, and how important it is for us, whenever we get something negative out of our life, to replace it with something good. Because if we don't, there's a temptation there that we end up going back to those negative things that we got out of our life because we don't replace them with something good. We talked about obedience to the call that God has placed upon our life to go and spread the gospel to those around us. And Paul specifically spoke to the Roman Christians. He says, I know you're living in one of the most vile and wicked cities of the world. If you heard some of the things that were allowed to take place in the Roman Empire, the wickedness and the promiscuity and the horrible things that happened in the city of Rome, you would say, how could Christianity survive there? How could Christianity not just survive, but to thrive and grow there? How were people being saved in the midst of wickedness? And I'll tell you, when people are exposed to the gospel, they have a choice that they have to make. Either they choose to accept that Jesus Christ loved them and that they're a sinner and that they can come to Christ and have their sins forgiven and have their lives changed, or they can reject it. But when exposed to the light of the gospel, many people, even those, you know, the wicked of the wickedest there in Rome, they accepted Christ. Their lives were changed. People were coming to Christ by the dozens, by the hundreds, by the thousands. And there was a difference being made in Rome by those Christians that were there. Paul couldn't do a lot. He longed to go to Rome, but God did not allow him to go there. And it says that even Satan attempted to hinder Paul from going there. But Paul was determined to go to Rome, even if that meant in chains. And we'll see how Paul did end up going to Rome and appearing before Caesar, chained up and in prison. But there was a desire that Paul had to see that the gospel of Jesus Christ was spread. Look at what it says in verse number 8 here of Romans chapter 1. It says, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. Look at how much of an impact and a difference these Roman Christians made. Their faith, their trust in Christ, their service to God was being spoken of throughout the whole world. And Paul says, I am thankful for that. I am grateful that I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all. He says, I'm thankful that you have a testimony of faithfulness to God. You know, people recognize your service to God, and they're talking about you all over the place. You know, as teachers, we you know, me and my fellow teachers were guilty sometimes of talking about our students. That was one thing that we used to do in the teachers' lounge during lunch. You know, we talk about our good students and talk about some of the good things that they've done, the accomplishments that they made in the classroom or on the basketball court or, you know, on the diamond or on the football field. And, you know, we talk about our students. And then there were some times where we'd, you know, talk about the not so great students, the kids in our class that, you know, were just a thorn in our side. But I remember when we talk about those standout kids, everybody, you know, you'd say their name and everybody, oh man, what a great kid. Oh, what a great kid. I tried to do that. We had parent-teacher conferences this week, and I tried to say something nice about all the students that I interacted with their parents with. Even if that kid wasn't doing so hot, I still tried to highlight something good that they did in the class. And, And isn't that the case? You know, you talk about a particular individual. You know, if I said, you know, speaking of the sports world, if I said the name Tom Brady, everybody would go, oh, what a great quarterback. You know, if I said, you know, LeBron James, what a great basketball player. If I said Dak Prescott, people would go, oh, what a horrible injury. And hope for that young man's speedy recovery. He's a competitor, even though I'm not a Cowboys fan. You know, there were a lot of thoughts and prayers going up by Cowboys fans. But, you know, when the Roman Christians were spoken about by other Christians, everybody said, man, what faith that they have. They were spoken of in a positive light because of their faithfulness to God in a faithless city. You know, for all the religiousness that we have in El Paso, I wouldn't classify this city as a full of faith city. We have a lot of people that have an appearance of religion, but they have no substance. And by that I mean they say that they're good people and that, you know, yeah, they believe in God, but, you know, you talk to them about what they believe and they really have no idea. You ask them why they're going to heaven when they die. And they say, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a good, you know, I guess I haven't killed anybody. I help old ladies. I don't, you know, I don't hit my dog. I guess I'm a pretty good person. But that's not the qualification for salvation, which we'll find in just a little bit. But that's not what qualifies a person to have salvation. So, you know, we live in a city of religiousness, but not Christianity. We don't see, you know, thousands of people following God and praising the Lord and serving the Lord. And so was the case in Rome as well. There was a lot of religiousness. They believed in their gods. They, you know, they followed their deities, the Roman gods, Jupiter and Mars. And you're like, wait a second, Pastor, those are the planets. Who do you think those planets were named after? The Roman gods. And they had a big influence on the known world. But for all their religiousness, they had no substance. I don't want to be a Christian that's all talk and no game. We spoke about that a couple weeks ago in our Bible study. We God doesn't want people who are just, you know, people of words. He wants people of action and people of substance. Christians that don't just talk the talk, but actually back it up with their actions, that walk the walk, as the old expression goes. But he says, your faithfulness is being spoken of throughout the world. Verse number 9, for God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. If somebody is dear to you, as a believer, if somebody is dear to you, you should pray for them. If you genuinely say that you care about them, you should pray for them. Paul cared so much about these Christians in Rome that he poured his heart out daily, constantly. It says he was praying without ceasing for these Roman Christians. He knew what they were going through. He knew what they were suffering through there in Rome. And he said, I'm not going to stop, and I haven't stopped praying for you because I love you, because I care for you. He says, God is my witness. And look at this. He says, if we pass by these little phrases, you know, we miss the significance of it. It says, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son. You know what Paul was saying? He's saying, when I serve God, I don't do it in my flesh. I can't do it with my physical strength and with my physical power. He says, I serve God with my spirit, the spirit that is empowered and emboldened by Jesus Christ. He says, I can't do anything in and of myself. It's only God's spirit giving my spirit the strength in order to serve you and to serve him. He says, I, without ceasing, make mention of you in my prayers. I know this week in particular, I've gotten phone calls from different people in the church. Pastor, pray for me. Last week, we... you know, people after services, Pastor, pray for us. You know, even had, I'm hoping, Miss Lydia, that your mother's doing better. We hope so. We were praying for her. She ended up in the hospital, and we were praying for her and praying that you know, that God would give wisdom to the doctors and that God would give healing. And I'm telling you, you know, prayer works. Prayer does work. I remember Miss Victoria telling me after little baby Caden's surgery to remove his tumor, she said, prayer works, Pastor. Prayer works. God does amazing things. But how is God going to do amazing things if we as his people don't pray for it? We just, it's almost like we expect God to do things without even asking for it. Isn't that the case with children? Children expect mom and dad to do everything for them without asking. Well, I just expected mom to make dinner. Well, I just expected dad to go to the store and get this for me. Well, how are we as parents going to know sometimes unless they ask? I, as a father, have been guilty of this before, and I'm probably admitting something that I shouldn't admit, and people that are watching and you that are here are going to be like, man, Pastor, you're such a terrible father. But there have been occasions where my wife is gone, and I'm at home with the kids on a Saturday, and my wife will come back after being gone for a couple of hours, and she'll go, did you feed the kids? And I'll go, no, honey, I didn't. They didn't say anything. They didn't ask. They didn't tell me that they were hungry. So I didn't really take care of it. I'm glad that God's not that way. You know, God knows what we need before we even ask or think of it. But just because God knows what we're going to ask, does it mean that we are now free of the responsibility or the privilege of getting to ask God? No. Paul says, I've been praying without ceasing for you, always in my prayers. I know God's going to take care of you, but that doesn't stop me from going to the throne and coming before God and praying for you anyways. I know God's going to take care of you, but I can still voice my request to God on your behalf. You know, I know God's going to provide for my needs, but that doesn't stop me from praying that He would. I know that God's will is going to be done in my life, whether it involves me living or whether it involves me dying. But I still pray to that end. God, do your will in my life. I know your will is going to be done no matter what, but God, do your will in my life. God, take care of my finances. You know, I know God can provide us a building, but that doesn't mean that I just throw up my hands and say, well, God's just going to do it when He wants to. No, I'm still praying for it. I'm praying for His will to be done. Look at Paul's request, the prayer that he made, not just for the Romans, but also for himself. He said, making request, if by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. He says, I want to get to Rome. I want to see you. I want to be there with you. I want to minister to you and with you. He says, I'm willing to go to any means to do that, to make that happen. Now, Paul, when he said this, I don't know if he was thinking that by any means meant that he was going to be enchained and taken to Rome as a prisoner. And that's how it happened. Paul was accused of crimes against the Roman Empire, of heresy and of treason. And he made his appeal to Caesar. As a Roman citizen, believe it or not, he was a Jew, but he was a citizen of Rome. And he had the right to make his case and appeal all the way to Caesar. And so that meant he was guaranteed an audience with Caesar to plead his case, to plead his innocence before the most powerful person in the world. And I don't think Paul realized when he says, hey, by any means, I want to get to you. I don't think he realized that that meant his imprisonment and his eventual martyrdom. Him dying for his faith. But he says, there's a reason why I want to get to you. Look at it in verse number 11. He says, for I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift to the end ye may be established. He says, I want to be there with you. I can't wait to be there with you. I know my sister and my brother-in-law told us a couple months ago that they wanted to move back to, or well, my sister's from El Paso, my brother-in-law is not, but she said, we want to move back to El Paso. And they were praying about it, and others were praying for them. And I was excited when they said, hey, we're moving to El Paso. And they're here in the city now. And I was excited. I was excited to see them. I found out just a couple days ago, my other sister is going to come visit. And it's going to be the first time in a long time that all of the siblings are in one place together, coming up in just a couple of weeks. And my heart longs for that. I mean, yeah, I'm old and I've got a beautiful wife and I've got a wonderful family and they take up much of my time. And you're like, well, Pastor, you work. Yeah, I work so that way my family can be taken care of. So they're the priority. They're the reason why I do what I do. But, you know, my family, like, there's always something going on. You know, when they shut down everything for the next couple of weeks, we've been sitting at home a lot, just kind of like, well, what do we do? everything's canceled. You know, gymnastics is canceled and basketball's canceled and, you know, all these different programs that and things that my kids are involved in are canceled. But, you know, it's nice to have my family, and I love my family, but, you know, I love and long to have, you know, to be there with my sisters again and to see them. You know, there's that desire when you've been absent from somebody or somebody's been away from you, somebody that you're close to, you know, your heart desires, your heart longs to be with them. Paul says, that's my heart. He says, I want to be with you. I want to be there with you. Why? So that I may, look at this. He doesn't say, I want to be blessed by you. He says, I want to impart unto you some spiritual gift. I want to be with you so I can be a blessing to you. And then he says, to the end result in mind, the goal being that ye may be established. We talked about that on Wednesday night. For those of you who joined us, when Paul sent Timothy to the church at Thessalonica to help establish their faith, to help make sure that they were grounded and solid. That's the same idea that's being presented here by Paul. He says, I want to impart a spiritual gift unto you. I want to be a blessing unto you so that way your faith can be strong, even in the midst of a oppressive regime and empire there in Rome. These government officials coming after you, I want your faith to be solid. I want to do everything I can to make sure that that is what is going on, that that is what is happening. And he says, that is, verse number 12, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. He says, if I can help to establish your faith, if I can help to make sure that you are solid and that you are sure and that you are strong and ready to face what comes against you, he says, that will be a comfort to me. He says, that will be a blessing to me. He says, I'm not wanting to be with you so you can be a blessing to me. But he said, the byproduct of me being a blessing to you is that I will be blessed and comforted because I poured myself into you. Sometimes God imparts blessings unto us by us being a blessing to others. That satisfaction that comes when we know that we've done God's will and that we've been a blessing and a help to somebody. Doesn't it just make your heart feel good? You know what? I served the Lord the best that I could. I was a blessing and a help to my fellow human beings. I was a blessing and a help to a brother or a sister in Christ. And we feel satisfied because we've talked about this last week. Serving God is serving other people. And when we serve God by serving others, we feel just that satisfaction of knowing that I have followed God's will for my life and I've been a blessing to somebody else, and there's peace and satisfaction and comfort that comes because of that. And that's what Paul is saying. He's saying, I know that I will be comforted and I will be blessed by being a blessing to somebody else. He says this, for I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oft times I purpose to come unto you. He says, I don't want you to not know. He says, I want you to know that there have been multiple times that I've wanted to come to you. It says, but was let hitherto, that I might have some fruit among you, also even as among the Gentiles. He says, I've wanted to come unto you so many times. I've wanted to be with you so many times, but God has not allowed it. It's not been God's will. It's not God's timing. Not yet. He says, I want to come so that way I can have fruit among the Gentiles. He says, I don't want to just see, you know, Jews saved. He says, I want to see Gentiles come to Christ. Why? Why would Paul want to come to Rome and make such an impact and a difference on Rome? Look at what it says here in verse number 14. Paul says, I am a debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. He says, so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. He says, I owe a debt. I owe a debt, Paul says. To who? To the Greeks? To the barbarians? What is he talking about? The barbarians is what the Romans called all the people that were outside of the Roman Empire. And what's interesting, as a world history teacher, I found out this fact. I always wondered why they were called barbarians. It's because the Romans said that all that those people, the languages that they spoke, just sounded like bar, 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 bar. You know, just, you know, we would use the word blah, blah, blah today. But that's why they called them the barbarians. Okay? Because their speech was foreign to them. They didn't really understand what they were talking about, so they were just the barbarians. But Paul is saying, I owe a debt to these people. Well, did Paul borrow money from them? No, that wasn't why he owed a debt to them. You know, it says that he was a debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. Well, with what? What did he owe them? Look at what it says in verse number 15. He says, "So as much as it is in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also." He says, "I am a debtor to the Greek, to the barbarian, and to the Roman." He says, "You know what I owe them? I owe them the gospel." He says, "It's my job to repay that debt. I owe them the gospel. As everything that is in me is," he says, "I owe them the truth. They deserve to hear the truth from me. I am a debtor to them." Can I encourage you with something here this morning? You're a debtor to your family. You're a debtor to the people that you work with. You're a debtor to the people that you go to school with. You're a debtor to the people that you play sports with, that you interact with every single day. You know what you owe them? The gospel. They deserve it. We've been commanded by God to take this and to share this with a lost and dying world. This is what they need. This is what we owe them. And how, the Bible says, how are they going to hear without a preacher or a teacher? How are they going to hear unless somebody tells them? You know, we have health issues in our body. We have things. The older I'm getting, the more I'm realizing this body falls apart very easily. It's not as sturdy as it used to be. I remember being able to wake up as a 15, 16-year-old boy, having slept only 2 or 3 hours because I stayed up all night playing video games, get 2 or 3 hours of sleep, pop up and go to school with no problem. Yeah, I might start falling asleep by like, 2 or 3 o'clock, like 7th or 8th period, but it's okay. You know, usually for the good part of the day, I was good to go. My body was good. Now at 33 years old, and you're like, "Pastor, be quiet. You're young." You know, 4 kids have aged me, y'all. I don't know if you know, those of you that have had, kids and large families, you understand that these kids age you in ways you know, science and doctors could never explain. Okay? They just add years, or should I say take away years from our life. They age us very quickly, but I can't get up like I used to whenever I was a 15, 16-year-old boy. It takes me, we had nothing going on yesterday. Everything was canceled. I slept for 10 hours yesterday. From Friday night to Saturday morning, I slept 10 hours. Yeah, I woke up a couple times because my kids still wake up at 7 a.m. ready to go, but I was able to sleep about 10 hours. You don't know how good I felt yesterday. I was like, I can do anything now. I can conquer the world. I am strengthened. I am empowered. But these bodies, they don't always do what we would like them to do. These bodies are falling apart. We don't have the power in us. We don't have the strength in us to accomplish what God has called us to do. I owe a debt. And just because I may not be physically gifted or spiritually gifted, just because I don't believe I have what is in me, what I believe is in me to be able to accomplish these things, it doesn't change the fact, it doesn't change the calling that God has placed on my life. Paul says, "You know what? I'm going to Rome. Whatever it means." He says, "I'm not going in my spirit and power, I'm going in God's spirit and power." Why? Because I owe a debt that needs to be paid. I must go to Rome. I must share the gospel. And it doesn't matter. Look at what he says. He says, it doesn't matter if it's the Greeks, the barbarians, or the Romans. You know what that means to me? It doesn't matter what their culture is. It doesn't matter what their skin color is. The gospel is not exclusive to one race, to one culture, to one ethnicity, to one language. The gospel isn't limited to any one people group. The gospel is for everybody. For every person. And there's no room for hatred. There's no room for biasness when it comes to the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel should be spread indiscriminately with whoever would hear it. Paul says, "I would go to Africa." Paul says, "I would go." He wanted to go to past Rome, even into Spain. He wanted to spread the gospel everywhere that he could. He says, why? Because I owe a debt to preach the gospel. I owe it to them. Every person deserves to be saved. Why? Why the gospel? Why is that what he wanted to spread with them? Look at what it says here in verse number 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. He says, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth. You know what Paul is saying here? He's saying it's not religion that saves. It's not good deeds that saves people. It's not living a holy life or being a seemingly self-righteous person. That's not where the power of God is. That's not where salvation is found. He says the power of God is in the gospel of Christ. And we've talked about that enough to know what that is. The gospel of Jesus Christ. Gospel means good news. The good news of Jesus Christ. Paul would later go on in the book of 1 Corinthians to define the gospel as this: the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's the good news, that Jesus Christ loved us enough that he died for us. And he went all the way, tasting death fully for us. He wasn't just asleep on the cross or passed out. No, he tasted death for us. He was buried, but he didn't stay buried. The Bible says that he rose again triumphantly over sin, death, and hell on the third day, accomplishing God's purposes. Why? So that we could have salvation. And when we put our faith and trust in the completed work of Jesus Christ, we don't have to do any more good deeds. We don't have to be self-righteous. When we put our faith and trust in Jesus Christ, his righteousness becomes our righteousness. We're saved not by ourselves, but by his glorious salvation and power, the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the power of God unto salvation for everyone that believeth. Not just the Jew, but also the Greek. Not just the Americans, but the Canadians, the Mexicans, the Ethiopians, the Australians, every person from every nationality. And not just people who are white, not just people who are black, not just people who have different skin tones. The gospel is for every single person. And if Jesus came to die for every single person, doesn't that mean that we as Christians should live to be a servant to every single person? We don't just give the gospel out to a certain group of people. Paul said, I'm a debtor both. Remember, he said to the Greeks, to the barbarians, and he also said to the wise and the unwise. He said, I don't just serve the people that deserve it or share the gospel with the people who I think deserve it. I share the gospel with everybody. There's no exclusions. You know, when we buy something, you know, you look at the bottom of the receipt, you see all the exclusions. You know, you enter a contest, and there's all these rules at the bottom. You know, you listen to those commercials, and at the end they have that speed reading thing. You know, not available in all 50 states. You know, and you almost have to like pause your DVR and like slow it down to like 25% speed just to hear what they're saying. I'm just glad that there's no exclusions and no fine print when it comes to the gospel. The gospel of Jesus Christ says, whosoever will can be saved. And then he says, for therein, verse number 17, is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. It's not from good deeds to good deeds. How is the righteousness of God revealed? By faith. And he says, as it is written, the book of Habakkuk says this, the just shall live by faith. How is salvation accomplished? By faith. How is the gospel spread? By faith. How are people's lives changed? By faith. It's the gospel. The power of God. Paul says it's my duty. It's my responsibility. It's my debt. It's my calling. It's everything that makes me what I am. He says, as much as is in me is, not by my might, not by my power, but by your spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. But by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. He says, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his son. Everything that I am, everything that I have is all devoted to this one singular purpose and this one single thing, this whole focus on spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ. Why? Because that's where God's power is. I'm sorry, but this world is not going to be changed by politics. It's going to be changed by the gospel. It's not going to be changed by all of us just doing good. No, no, no. It's going to be changed by us spreading the gospel and serving the Lord and serving others. That's where God's power is. It's not in community organizations. Now, I'm not saying that all these things aren't good and helpful and wonderful, but I'm telling you, where is life-changing power coming from? It's coming from the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel of Jesus Christ is what it is and what it'll take to break the divisiveness in our country. It's only God's might and power that's going to do that. Only God's might and power is going to change the immorality that we see in our world and in our nation. The sinfulness that we see. It's only going to be God's power that changes things. And you know what? It's not going to happen unless we as His people are praying without ceasing. Praying for our nation. Praying for our world. Praying for us that we would have the boldness to share the gospel, the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ with a lost and dying world. Why? Because that has the power alone to change lives. So what should our focus be? Well, I believe if it was Paul was standing here before us today, he would offer up this wisdom and this advice. He would say, you and I owe a debt. You and I owe a debt to this whole world to share the gospel with them. That's how we repay that debt. And everything that makes us who we are should go to accomplishing that purpose. Everything, like he said in verse number 15, so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you. That should be our purpose. That should be our goal. That should be our desire. To be a blessing. That I may impart unto you some spiritual gift to the end that ye may be established. So I'd ask you, if you're not sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ, why? Why not? Maybe some of us are ashamed. Well, I'm worried about what my family might say to me if I tell them about God. I'm worried what my coworkers might think about me if they know I'm a Christian. If we know the truth and we are assured of it, why should we be ashamed of it? If we know the truth, we should be proud and emboldened to share that truth with others. If you were on a boat that was sinking, wouldn't you want somebody to come and tell you that the boat was sinking? Oh, well, I don't want to scare them. I don't want to panic them. I don't want them to think ill of me if I tell them the boat is sinking. No. If you know the boat's sinking, you're going to tell everybody, hey, hurry up, get off the boat. This boat's going down. Hey, we know that this world is coming to an end. We know at the end of this life is eternity. And we know that there is a heaven and we know that there is a hell. And who are we if we do not, knowing the truth, take that truth and share it with somebody else? Don't just tell people, oh, change your lives and everything will be okay. Hey, be a good person and everything will be all right. That's not where God's power is found. It's in the gospel and the spreading of the gospel. God will embolden us. God will empower us. He will give us what we need. He'll give us the strength to share the gospel. He'll give us the courage if we ask Him. And it all goes back to prayer. Paul was praying for those Jews, those Greeks, and those Romans. He was praying for the opportunity to be with them. He was praying for the opportunity to share the gospel with them and to help them share the gospel in the city. We need to make sure that we are praying for our city. We need to make sure that we are praying for our nation. We're praying for each other. We're praying that God would give us a building. Yes, all those things are great, but more importantly, we need to pray that God would use us to make an impact, to make a difference, to take the power of the gospel, the power of the gospel that has the power to change people's lives, and share it with somebody so that way their life can be changed. Their eternal destination can be changed. It is the power of God from faith to faith. That is the righteousness of God, the gospel that we should not be ashamed of. It is the power of God to everyone that believes.